Welcome to the Busy Leaders Podcast, a catalyst for inspired action, a lively and engaging podcast hosted by Quint Studer. In each high-impact segment, Quint chats with the individuals on how they're navigating today's environment. Quint and his guests showcase best practices and how they work in different contexts. You'll often walk away with tactical tools and tips that you can apply to your own role, business, community, and life. I'm Nicole Webb-Bodie, the Chief Impact Officer at Studer Family of Companies. Quint is a well-known healthcare operator, author, coach, and mentor to many. He has dedicated the last three decades to creating tools and techniques that make healthcare a better place for physicians to practice medicine, patients to receive care, and employees to work. He has written numerous books, articles, and his work is always based on evidence, research, and tools and techniques. For more information and to listen to previous podcasts, visit thebusyleadershandbook.com/podcast. Leadership is a mindset, not a skill set, and it starts with purpose. Mike Harbor and Dr. Brian Haas joined the podcast to share information about their presentations at the Gratitude Symposium, as well as helpful resources for changing the mindset. Mike is the founder and president of Harbor Resources, a leader consulting, training, and talent management firm. During the podcast, he shares four ways individuals can create a path of upward mobility in their life and leadership to experience more peace, more success, and more abundance in their life, business, and leadership of others. Dr. Brian Haas is a hospitalist and physician leader and coach who explores how life stressors can deplete your emotional intelligence reserves and how this can negatively impact your patients, your family, your friends, and lead to burnout and dissatisfaction with your career. During the podcast, Brian provides strategies to create an environment and culture to maximize the human potential. Stay tuned as you learn valuable resources to help your mindset and replenish your emotional intelligence. To view Mike's action guide and Dr. Haas's blog post, as well as additional helpful links referenced in the podcast, visit thebusyleadershandbook.com/podcast. Now here's your host, Quint Studer, and guests Mike Harbor and Dr. Brian Haas.
Well, welcome to the Busy Leader Podcast. This is Quint Studer, and what we've been doing is taking our Gratitude Symposium faculty members and bring them on to the podcast to sort of catch up to them. What have they experienced with the Gratitude Symposium? What happened since the Gratitude Symposium? But more importantly, what they're doing to help organizations become better, because that's why they were on the Gratitude faculty and they're continuing to do that and so on. So Mike Harbor is our first guest. I've known Mike Harbor for a long time. We met at a John Maxwell event, which was sort of exciting. And Mike helped arrange that. I got to have lunch with John Maxwell, which was a real treat for me, Mike. And you've been a coach in the John Maxwell organization and one of their senior coaches for quite a while. And so why don't you talk to your listeners about your experience with the Gratitude Symposium? You gave a toolkit and it got downloaded. You gave sort of a tool that people could utilize. And it was probably our most downloaded tool for the whole Gratitude Symposium. So talk about your presentation and the toolkit and so on.
Yeah, thanks, Quint. First of all, I'm just grateful to be invited to be on your podcast and also be a part of the Gratitude Symposium. There's an old saying, Quint, when the student's ready, the teacher appears, right? And I think that's what the Gratitude Symposium did for me. I've always kind of been a grateful person, I thought. And then you hear the stories of some of the faculty members and think, man, I've got some work to do because, I'm kind of grateful, right? But I complain a little bit too, like, well, this is not really going well in my life, or this is not really going well in my business or in my family. And I think the Gratitude Symposium, first of all, I was just honored to be invited by you, but to learn from so many of the other, were there 45 or six other faculty members there that I was able to learn from them and share in the experience. And the toolkit really, Quint, I don't know if you and Brian, my dad growing up, he would always tell me to get a better attitude or do this or do that, but he never really told me how to do it. He'd kind of leave me there. And so what I've done in my life is to try to create tools where people have the ability to say, okay, I want to be more grateful, but how do I do that? And so that's really what the Gratitude Action Pack is all about. Is I gave the talk the four kind of key ways to use stories or past events in your life to raise your altitude on gratitude. And so I just put some tools together to help people do that, like five reasons why we should practice and teach gratitude. I mean, it's important. I need to be reminded of that. Why do I need to practice gratitude in my own life? But then also put some things in there of how you can take those same tools and help your team, the team that you lead, because I'm really interested, like you, in developing leaders and helping leaders become more effective. So to also take those tools and apply them in the team building and team shops that leaders do as well. So that's really what the action guide is all about from that presentation.
Tell me a little bit more about the action guide, Mike, because I know, you know, people can go on, they can go to your website, which we'll send out later. We now, for those of you that aren't aware of this, we had so many requests for, hey, May was busy. I didn't get to listen to all or watch all the videos. Is there any way I can get a hold of some of these? Some of the people have allowed us to, and if you go to thegratitudegroup.com, you'll be able to pick up some of the presentations. AUPHA, faculty members in healthcare administration, I know, are utilizing them as teaching material this year. But why don't you go a little more detail? So if I get this action guide, what's it going to look like? What are you going to be specifically telling me to do?
Yeah, so five reasons, as I mentioned a minute ago, why we should practice gratitude and teach gratitude in our life. Quint, I think the most important reason for me is it improves psychological health. You know, I need that on a daily basis. I need to be reminded that my mental health, and especially today, all the challenges we've had, you know, in the world and in the healthcare world that we're in, our mental health takes a hit. And so when we wake up just grateful for the opportunity to serve other people, gratitude enhances empathy and reduces aggression. I'm a pretty aggressive, I like to use the term assertive now, right? But I just need to be reminded of that. The more grateful I am for the opportunity to serve other people, Quint, to help other people, it reduces my aggressiveness toward them and helps me be more compassionate. I was talking to Nicole a couple of days ago about, you know, I have to really work on being empathetic or compassionate toward other people. I grew up, and I share a little bit of this in the talk, I grew up in a pretty dysfunctional environment. And so I've always said, you know, if it is to be, it's up to me. And so I have to work hard to realize that some people need a little bit more inspiration and motivation. So I really put the action guide together, not to just inspire people, Quint, in that talk that we did in the Gratitude Symposium, but to really give them a roadmap to take action on the ideas in life. And then there's the team action impact steps, really taking those four ways to create a path of upward mobility for our teams and then infusing those into the conversations that we have with our team. Because right now, leadership is probably more challenging than it's ever been. They can take those steps and start having real gratitude type conversations with the team members that they are leading, hopefully move people out of, oh my God, the sky is falling, into action to be more grateful and then serve, you know, serve their patients, serve the community, and serve the team members much better. And I think that's really what the action guide will help people do.
Tell me, I'm listening to this podcast and you use that word four ways. Can you tell me a little bit what those four ways might be, or at least a few of those four ways?
Yeah, well, number one, for me, Quint, I don't know if anyone else struggles with this, but I like to blame other people sometimes. You know, As I said, I grew up in a dysfunctional environment, so it'd be real easy for me to blame my parents for my station in life today. So step number one, that first way, is just to admit that I'm in control. You know, right now with COVID, and maybe I'm working for a company that's challenging me to do certain things. I know there's a lot of talk right now in the world about, you know, should we take a vaccine or should we not take a vaccine? And at the end of the day, I think everybody, to be more grateful, number one, is just admit where I'm in control. I'm in control of what I think. I'm in control of how I respond. I'm in control of how I interact with others. So that's the first way. And then the second way is to just quit blaming others about my past. Use that as an obstacle. Quint, you write in your new book, The Calling, use obstacles as a way to propel you forward. And you talk about, you know, one of the stories you share in there is about, you know, you had a stuttering challenge when you were a kid, and using that as an obstacle to help you grow and learn. And I think that's a critical step in gratitude, to be grateful for the challenges that we've had in our life or that we're facing right now. Be grateful for those and then ask, ask, you know, God in my case, or, you know, ask the person that you believe in, how can I use this as a way to step forward and learn? And that's kind of the first two ways, Quint. And then we have to create a desire, a dream that's bigger than where we're currently at, our current circumstance. That's the third way. And then surround myself with other believers. I think this is critical, Quint. You and I started hanging out together a few years ago. I can be, you know, this, I say this with great humility for you. My life has gotten better in the last 3 years just because of the way you dream. You're a big thinker. And that fourth step is critical. You got to have other big thinkers, big dreamers around you to give you hope and inspire you to go forward. You'll get stuck and you'll fall back into that second trap of blaming others.
Well, it's nice to be called challenges. A big thinker. I sometimes think I've been called delusional. So I like the word big thinker better than delusional. So thank you very much. How about a few, any others you want to add to that quick?
Yeah, no, I think, we have to lead others to surround themselves with believers. That's one of those team action impact steps, Quint. It's not enough. One of the challenges I have, and I don't think it's a challenge. I think it's a gift. It's a challenge for other people. I don't like leaving people where they're at. I get in trouble a lot by my wife and my daughter because I want to fix them. When they bring me a problem, I want to fix them, right? But I think as a leader, we're called to move people. And sometimes we have to lead others to surround themselves with other believers. People surround themselves with people that think a lot like them. And if they're stuck, they're going to remain stuck if they don't step outside of that circle that they're currently in and find other people who are going somewhere where they want to go. And I think that's the biggest key for leaders, is we have to help others realize the people they have around them. There's an old saying, I think it was Charlie Tremendous Jones said that, you know, 5 years from or 10 years from now, you'll become like the five people that are closest to you. And I think that's critical for leaders to understand, because they want to move their teams from a place of being stuck, especially right now. They've got to get engaged with those team members and help surround them. Maybe it's through the Gratitude Symposium, the new gratitude community that you've put together, where they can use those talks, use the book of the calling, do some studies to move people out of the place of feeling stuck and to a place of more gratitude in their life.
Last night, I was lucky enough to listen to Josh Sitton. And Josh Sitton, for those of you that don't know, was an 11-year player in the NFL. He was a two-star recruit out of high school, which meant he had three scholarship offers, maybe. Went to college. They thought he'd never be drafted. He showed up at a pro day, did quite well, got drafted by the Green Bay Packers, and was named one of the all-decade to the all-decade team in the NFL from 2010 to 2019, four-time Pro Bowl, Super Bowl champion. You know, he talked a lot about, Mike, and you talk about it, is he had to get his mindset going before his skill set went. And he talked about going to the first training camp with the Green Bay Packers, completely intimidated by the whole thing. And he had to get his mind going first. And when he said all of a sudden when he got his mind going, eventually the body caught up with the mind. So why don't you talk a little bit as you wrap up here with it's a mindset, not a skill set.
Oh, man, this is my favorite topic to talk about, Quint, because mindset, it's been everything in my life. Once I learned that, you know, maybe some of my subconscious programming was holding me back, and I began to start working on my mindset and this self-belief, the self-image, the self-worth that we all have. And I love that story you just shared with Josh Sitton, right? I think it's important to get ourselves in the right frame of mind. You can have all the tools in the world as a leader, as a team builder. I think of, you know, Quint, you love baseball like I do. I think you actually own a couple of minor league baseball teams. Those players can step into the batter's box, and if they don't believe, if they go to the plate and say, I hope I don't strike out, they're going to strike out, or they're going to have very limited success because their mindset is not in a place of belief, a place of future hope. And so they play tense, they play with fear. And look, I do this a lot in my life. I think, you know, there's an old book that I read, Quinn, I don't think you're this old, but James Allen wrote a book in 1902 called As a Man Thinketh, right? And he said, people are anxious to improve their circumstances, but are unwilling to improve themselves. They therefore remain bound. And I think it's the mindset that keeps us bound. When I begin to believe that I have value to add to the world, that I have, that I am a leader, that I'm a great communicator, that I can be in this circle. Quinn, again, to be honest with you, I delayed reaching out to you probably for years before I finally did, because I was intimidated by your stature in the industry. I was afraid I didn't have enough value to bring to the relationship. And so I delayed my reaching out to you. Now, you know, we have a budding relationship, a growing relationship, and I'm grateful for that. I just think all of us as leaders, no matter where we're at in life, we need to answer the question, what has my programming told me? And what am I going to do to overcome that programming? You write about it, Quinn, in the book, again, The Calling. And you said, you know, I was programmed early on that I had to do difficult things to be comfortable in order to get the desired outcome. I think all of us have to answer the question, what's the outcome I'm looking? What's the programming that I need to change in my mindset in order to have that outcome that I'm looking for? It's been critical for me in my life and my leadership and the growth of my business as well.
Well, thanks, Mike. And, you know, you brought up things as we transition to Dr. Haas here. But, you know, Peter Senge, one of the things that was a game changer for me was years ago. I'm talking like early 1990s. I read a book called The Fifth Discipline by Peter Senge. And I actually went to Santa Cruz, California for a 4-day workshop on the fifth discipline. And they said, if you look at the goal, you'll move through the barriers. If you look at the barriers, you'll hit them. And they actually physically did exercises with us. So they had us stand and they had us like pretend that we're walking. We held our arm out and we just said, hold your arm out. And a person pushed down and you pushed up and you said, how much pressure? And then they said, now hold your arm out and pretend there's a telephone pole behind you, telephone pole in front of you, a steel rod through your arm. Just visioning that was a difference. So I think people either can vision the goals or vision the barriers. Whichever one you vision is what you're going to hit. So I love that. And I love your sayings. And I'm so excited, Mike, again, for our relationship and grateful to you. And well, Brian Haas, I'm so excited because, you know, when you, what happened with the Gratitude Symposium, for those people that are wondering, is I sent a note out and I said, if you think of anyone that you would love to have on the Gratitude Symposium, send me their name. And you were like first number one request that started coming in. You know, you've got to have Dr. Brian Haas. If you're going to do this, you've got to have Brian Haas. And I heard from numerous people. So, and I love your topic, you know, your topic on the whole emotional intelligence. And I think it's so key. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your work and what you've been accomplishing, what you've been seeing, and so on.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Quinn. It's just been a really great honor for me personally. I've been speaking and coaching now for going on about 3 years. And I'm a full-time practicing hospitalist as well. So that's my day job. And then I like to do these types of things for fun because I think they are so important to do. But being part of the Gratitude Symposium was an extremely incredible opportunity for me. And more so than anything, I really enjoyed being able to be around, even virtually, these incredible, talented, motivated people, because it's inspiring. Like when we would have one of the calls together to come together, it was just great to be able to get off that call. And it's like, wow, everybody just filled my bucket, you know, I mean, incredibly so that it's overflowing at this point. So it was really exciting. But in regards to my talk, I'm a very staunch believer in mindset and emotions, kind of like Mike was saying before, you know, and I think that emotions strongly impact all of our interactions. So, you know, when we're happy, we're satisfied, we're grateful, our mood's improved, and we have improved interactions. But when we're sad, angry, upset, or ungrateful, then those moods that we're going to have, those interactions are not going to be nearly as positive. And I think that the medical community at large, even before COVID comes into play, has struggles with this. And I saw it in my personal practice, with colleagues. I've seen it in multiple other facilities as well too. And it's when doctors, many of them, especially hospitalists, come into work for the day and they have an increased workload because someone called out sick or something happened, or we just had an increase in census, then they can get very upset and frustrated, and they have a difficult time dealing with the stressors. So if we are able to recognize, right, that we're having these negative emotions, then we're able to self-manage those negative emotions, right? So it sounds like we're talking about a negative thing when in all honesty, we're talking about a very positive opportunity to be able to reframe your mindset and to be able to deal with those stressors in a positive way as opposed to a negative way. So it's like it's reframing your mindset in terms of saying, you know, I'm really upset that I have to see XYZ number of patients, where it's like, no, I'm really excited because I'm going to get to provide high quality care to X more people. And so changing that mindset around, or a lot of the times it's, man, this is going to be a really long day, and immediately calling your family and saying, hey guys, it's going to be a busy day. And that can help to really address the other stressors that are coming in from the rest of our lives. And so I think it's really powerful when you can take a very small change, make a small change, and it have a massive impact on the way that you feel for the day. So that's why I was excited about it. But then, of course, with COVID, it just kind of really amped everything up as well. So,
well, I think too, Brian, as you talk about this, we talk a lot about messaging. When I think of messaging, I start thinking about messaging to others. But when I hear you talk, when I read your material, a blog you recently wrote, I think we really get into messaging to ourselves. And, you know, I never do a podcast without mentioning Cousin Al, it seems, for some reason. My cousin, he really is my cousin. And one day he said, what are you doing next week? And I said, well, I got to go. And I talked about, I got to go on the road. I got to go here. And he just looked at me and said, why don't you change the word got to get? And you know, that small little messaging that, you know, I get, like you said, I get to provide care to people. I get to impact people. So why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, we're in healthcare and you can't look anywhere right now, which is without people talk about burnout, emotional bank. They might not mention it. My emotional bank account is running dry, but that's really what it is. And you're sort of an expert on that whole emotional bank account and replenishing that bank account. You want to talk a little bit about your work and how you recommend people do that?
Absolutely. Well, I think it comes back to first being able to recognize your emotions and how you're feeling, because I think that a lot of people in the healthcare environment are a very type A personality. They're driven, dedicated people who often just kind of put their head down and accept that increased workload. And so we have to help those people first and foremost to just recognize that they do have stress and that they do have difficulties, because a lot of them, I read an article, there was this one guy, and I'm blanking on his name now, but like he had worked for like 287 days straight at the time that the article was written, when COVID was present, because he felt that he needed to do that. And I think that the medical community is full of people that are like him. Now, maybe not everybody's working 287 days straight, but they're working very, very hard at making sure that people are being taken care of. And oftentimes they sacrifice themselves, and that can add up. It's a cumulative effect. Fatigue over and over and over again. And so we first have to A, recognize that we're having the problem. B, we have to figure out how we can self-manage that problem. And then we have to figure out a way in which self-managing that issue is going to be able to lead us down a pathway of why did we do this in the first place, which is where empathy comes in, right? Because empathy and gratitude are huge. And if we can't demonstrate that empathy, we can't demonstrate that gratitude to somebody else, it's going to be very difficult for a clinician, whether that's a doctor, a nurse, a CNA, whomever, to be able to go in and provide that compassionate care, because their emotional bank account has been just drawn out over and over and over, and it's not being replenished. So how do we replenish that? And so a lot of it is getting back to the primary reason why we went into healthcare in the first place, right? So why did I go into healthcare? Did I go into healthcare because I thought it was a stable job? Did I go into healthcare because I wanted to make money? Probably not. You went into healthcare because you liked helping and taking care of people. And so if we can get back to that core environment, we can help to modulate the reasons why we're feeling stressed, right? So if you're feeling stressed because you haven't had a day off in 15 days, then you need to figure out a way to be able to get somebody else to come in and help you, or we need to figure out a way for your team to help you in that regard. And that kind of leads me into culture, because I think culture is a really important aspect of overall healthcare environment. Because if we don't have a positive culture that's supportive of us, then it's going to be very difficult for the healthcare providers to provide the care that they need to provide. So
I think too, Brian, we treat symptoms in healthcare. We don't have at times the cultures that we can maximize human potential. So we treat the symptom and we keep treating symptoms without treating the root cause analysis. And I talk about that all the time that, you know, I can be frustrated because things start late and I can do all sorts of things to handle my frustration with lateness. What would really be good if things started when they were supposed to start? You know, then I really know what I'm dealing with. The other thing, I can't stop myself here with hospitalist, okay? So okay. I'm going to say this, and I don't like the name hospitalist. I think hospitalist is confusing. I think people don't understand it. I've been recommending for years, and I hope somebody tells me they've done it and it works. I think a hospital is an inpatient specialist many. When people get referred to a specialist, and I think if somebody said, I'm an inpatient specialist, I specialize in taking care of people that are in the hospital, and I communicate, boom, boom, boom. People say, oh, great, I have an inpatient specialist. Not, well, what was my doctor? Where is my doctor? So I'll be done. That's my commercial. I think hospitalists are hardworking people. And I think they sometimes have to spend a lot of time telling people who they are and what they are. And I think if you use the word inpatient specialist, it would have an impact. But that's my delusional thinking once again. So you recently wrote a blog, What We Can Learn from Ted Lasso. Why don't you talk about that and his focus on culture?
Yeah, no, actually, this is a fun little thing that I decided to write. I don't know if anyone's seen the show Ted Lasso. It's a enjoyable show. There's now two seasons that are out. And the premise, and I won't give too much away for the show, but Ted Lasso is actually an American football coach who wins a Division II national championship at Wichita State. And so he is recruited by a owner of a football team in England. So not football like American football, but soccer. And so this guy literally knows nothing about soccer at all. And that's what kind of sets up the premise because it's a comedic show. But one of the things that's awesome is that Ted helps to change the culture. And so what Ted does is, for an example, just one quick example is Ted's watching practice and one of the players is running a play and completely messes up on what he's supposed to do. And he's sitting there beating himself up and Ted's on the sidelines and he calls the guy over and he says, you know, the player immediately comes over and says, coach, I'm so sorry. You know, because he's figuring the coach called him over because he's going to get yelled at for not doing what he was supposed to do. And instead Ted just listens to the guy and says, do you know what the happiest animal on the earth is? And the player's just like, what are you talking about? You know? And he says, it's a goldfish. You know why the goldfish is the happiest animal on the planet? And the player's like, no. He's like, has a 10-second memory. He says, go be a goldfish. And he sends the player back out into the field. And I think it's so key. And it's very similar to what Mike said earlier about, you know, the baseball player getting into the batting box. And if he has any doubt in the back of his mind about how he's going to be performed or how he's going to be judged, it's going to be very difficult for him to be able to succeed. And so what Ted does is he sets up a culture where everybody is respected, healthy, happy, loved, in all honesty. And it's clearly not something that changes overnight. It's something that changes over a period of time. And Ted's really good at being able to identify where the problems are, right? And they can be something like that simple. Like he puts out a comment box and says, you know, give me your comments. And one of the comments is the water pressure in the showers are crummy. Well, so he has the water pressure fixed. The players are like, oh my gosh, he got the water pressure fixed, you know? And I think that those are the simple things that we can all apply in regards to the teams that we manage, the facilities that we're at, is that we need to be dealing on a very basic level of trying to allow people to perform their best. So Ted doesn't coach soccer. He doesn't know anything about soccer, but yet he's going to be successful at coaching a soccer team, not because of his expert knowledge in regards to soccer, but because he's going to allow the players to function in an environment that they're already highly trained. They're professional Premier League soccer players. They know how to play the game, right? Well, they can all use a little bit of tweaking and tidbits in here and there, but they need to be unleashed with their own potential. And that's what Ted allows them to do.
And we're going to, Nicole Webb-Bodie, who does such a great job working with the Gratitude Symposium, put together the Gratitude Group website. We'll make sure that we get to everyone who's listens to this access to your work, because I know you have a place that they can go to get the blog post and so on. I think what you hit was a great point. So many times it's, can we take something off your plate? Can we reduce something? Can we remove a barrier? Because we keep adding things to people's plate and we never take anything off, it seems. So I think the water pressure is a great example that that made their life better. So I love that. And I think I've got a lot of goldfish in me, but I wish I had a little bit better memory sometimes. So you recommend, what do you recommend right now? You know, you're in healthcare, you're seeing patients. So you're right there in the front lines. What do you recommend to leaders that just say to you, you know, what should we do? You mentioned culture, but tell me a little bit, if you could give a few quick tips on, hey, this podcast is over and this is another podcast. I'm writing notes. I'm learning. I joke at people tell me they listen to it in the car and, or they listen to it exercising. And I keep thinking, but then they say, but then I have to stop and write this stuff down because I hear so many good tips. So give us just a few things that people might want to focus on. Assuming again, don't have a lot of time. I'm busy in healthcare. What can I do to focus to improve the culture or look at the culture a little more carefully?
Sure. I mean, I think there's so many different books on culture. I mean, one of my favorites, John Cotter's Leading Change. And he goes through like a 7-step process in regards to being able to help you implement a culture change at your facility. But I think first and foremost, we need to take a simple step by analyzing the culture, right? Like what is the culture at your institution? So if I think that would actually take a lot of people by surprise, if I came up and asked a manager, describe the culture here. That is something that I think takes people by surprise. And I think that that's the first step in the opportunity is determining or defining what your culture is, what you want your culture to be, and then where is your culture at? Because culture change is going to take a long time to develop. It's not going to be something that happens overnight. And I think then you have to collect the data. So, I mean, I'm a doctor, I'm a scientist first, is that I have to first identify my data and identify where I'm going to need to go. So I have to have a good understanding of where my hospital staff is. And that's going to be hard, especially in a large hospital. If you're in a hospital with, you know, 300 plus beds, you've got medical staff of 500-600 people, if not more. You know, you've got probably 800 nurses, if not more. That's going to be a very challenging situation in order to be able to identify that. So helping your senior level people, your CEOs, your C-suite, those people, then helping the managers to identify that so that they can make it a manageable aspect, and then be able to have a culture initiative so that you can have some key players put together to be able to help drive that culture change. So I think first it's identify what your culture is and define what you want it to be. And then number two would be to analyze where your culture currently is. And then how are you going to move to that third process, which is going to be implementing your culture change, which is going to take a time, and you're going to need to have goal steps and baby steps to implement that change. But again, like we talked about at the very beginning, it's messaging, it's delivering it. This is how we're doing it. These are the steps that we're going to take. It's not going to happen overnight.
I think it's courage as you're sitting here thinking, you know, ask people what the culture is. I'm sitting here thinking, I'm going to do that. And then I say, but then I have to really, you know, maybe hear some things I don't want to hear because I think I know what the culture is. But I think that's the toughest part to be a leader, to gain that self-awareness. It's getting through that fear. But what if I don't hear what I want to hear? You know, I know it sounds crazy to people listening. It's out there anyway. Years ago, I had a CEO call me and said, Quint, since we started working with you, I think our, you know, it's gotten worse, not better. I said, no, you just now know what's going on. It's always been there. It's just that you weren't aware of it because it was sort of hidden, and it starts surfacing, and we've got to have courage. And I'm talking to myself, by the way, right now, everybody listening, because, you know, I'm sort of a scaredy cat, basically, with all these things. But Nicole, we do a lot of training and development with our companies. And I think that's one of the assignments I'm going to give people is, you know, just write a paragraph or two. What do you think our culture is here? Where is it at? The other thing, too, Brian, I know you mentioned large hospitals and large systems, but You know, some of the real challenges in America right now are these smaller hospitals, these critical access hospitals, our county-run hospitals. I was talking to Lynn Barr, who's the founder of Caravan Health, who services a lot of small providers. Man, they've really got challenges also, just like everybody else. You know, they've got fewer doctors, fewer staff. I talked to a CEO the other day that, you know, one of his nurses said, you know, I really love working here, but I'm going to go travel for a year because there's just so much money out there I can make traveling. Then I'll come back. And of course, he's going to support that. But, you know, that's going to have a big impact. So, again, I had a great talk with Lynn Barr on the whole idea of what can we do for these county-owned hospitals, these safety net hospitals, these critical access hospitals. So we're all in this together, and we're all absolutely in this together. So, and I am so thrilled to have this opportunity with you. I got to spend time with Brian Haas and Mike Harbor, who literally do it for the right reason, out there just trying to make the world a little better place. And again, I'm so grateful that I've gotten to know both of you better and going to continue to get to know you better, because our whole goal is to really provide solutions to people. So thank you both for being on the Busy Leader podcast. We're excited. Again, people, we're going to give information how to contact both of you separately. Also information, they can go to thegratitudegroup.com to learn more about that. Love to put your blog on there, Brian, if people can go to there too to get your blog. Yeah, and Mike, you write great stuff. So thank you very much. I appreciate it and grateful to both of you.
Thank you, Quint. Yep. And Nicole, thank both of you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for listening to the Busy Leaders Podcast, a catalyst for inspired action, hosted by Quint Studer. Please subscribe, rate us, and write a review. For more information, visit thebusyleadershandbook.com.